Elegant Sea Urchin is an eldritch audio drama written, produced, and presented by Studio Swoon as part of the greater Swooncraft Creative. It would mean a lot if you shared or supported us. Head over to elegantseaurchin.xyz if you're so inclined. And before the program starts, is that the clock ticking, or is your heart beating at 60 beats per minute? If it's speeding up fast, it's likely your heart, as your current focus on it makes it a little anxious. If it's speeding up linearly, but by an impossibly small fraction, it's likely the clock. Hey, you, listening. Thanks, and enjoy. Nertel glittered on the horizon for about a day. A mirage, a hazy, glittering place of rest. The inland path weaved, making Yule and I more exhausted, knowing that a straight path would get us to the hollow ship in an odd seventh. Pylea assured us that staying on path, after nearly getting lost in the fields, was the best option. If my leg wasn't numb, I know I wouldn't have made it. The approach helped alleviate our taxed minds. Both of our spirits lifted as the spires beyond Nertel rose further into the smogs. The tide of the city before us, awash with gold and blue. The hollows, nothing like the atriums of the capital in the background, or the areas of the high places from the cove. I feel that the best part of this area is that the shores surrounding Lunatha don't have valleys and crags to trap and pool the miasma. Rather, the shallow valley the prefectures rest in below the crags and cliffs above gently slope to drain incredibly efficiently out of the hollows. And the hollows themselves reflect this, some appearing so open that they may as well be ancient remains of long-lost Strazodon ancestors 20 times bigger than the ones we see today. The truly unique feature that I think sets Nertel apart from other burgs we've drifted through is that each kinship hollow is more unique, built in a way that seems to exude their own demeanor and lavish flair. On our approach, I looked back to Pylea. She was watching us with a calm smile. Not pinned up, just a lazy smile. And for just a split second, though, I thought, no, she was probably just looking at the surrounding fields. You know, really thinking about those fields, there was something strange. It wasn't some sort of eldritch strange that riddles all of our lives. Like how the Hotel Crepuscular was its own strange. The little blue flames, the shadows, well, that's a riddle for someone else. The most striking features of the land as you approach the place of the peppercorns is that there are many spindly spires thrusting from the ground. The capital is a foundationless web of atrium stuck in place over the mossy and viscous gulf. And the place of our first arrival, Nertel, is a squat spire of a building, atop, like a mangled hand reaching for the smogs, a chronology spire. Like a blazing beacon, it shared hues with the glowing reds of the skies from the fire season, standing out among the shimmering gold and blues of Nertel. "Are you in the cathedral?" Pylea asked. I affirmed her question. "Cathedral ducks na." Eul seemed immediately alarmed. "A church for a ducks?" "Odder things exist in places you're not familiar with. For you coven urchins, it may be a little more of a shock since you don't really like the ducks treading your shores." Pylea explained that an epoch ago, the shores of Lunatha and the Gulf used to be much different. And the one who shaped it was this saint alone. As the story goes, Dux Nath stared for an entire golden season into the void. Whether factual or not, who can say, but for those long 88 days, it's told that she took no sustenance. Nothing but the miasma nourished her. At the end of the season, an eldritch thing fell from the smogs, crashing with an impact to rival the glowing dawn. By miracle or luck, Nath was left unharmed, staring, watching, patient. Until at last the fallen thing, this gorger, as Pylee named it, rose from the depths of the gulf. It stood on several thick legs resembling cords of twisted and tangled roots, keeping its belly just over the mossy gulf. The mass of the gorger, mostly a maw, large enough to rival the empty void of a black hole, the top of its rotund girth obscured by the swirling smogs. It stomped forward, closer to where the Duke sat, staring, stalwart, calm. The eldritch thing inhaled sand, detritus, the moss, chunks of the surrounding cliffs were swept into its bottomless maw. Duke's Nath, by miracle or eldritch power, was not sucked into the pit of the gorger's belly. At the apex of the elder god's inhale, it unleashed a roar that shook the sediment of hollows across our tangerine speck. Nath stood against the horror. Around her, the valley we have arrived at was shaped by the raging god. The tale closes by saying that she fed off the monolithic horror, and it fed off her. This exchange of pushing and pulling energies is what is said to have created the monolithic spire stuck in place over the shores of the mossy gulf. Nath's will endured for a long time. When at last she turned, she took the remains, a mere pod left from the eldritch thing, her final resting place, where she struggled and staggered to carry the infant terror, is where the cathedral was constructed. The day she met the glowing dawn is the day the lunatics celebrate, known as the Day of Decay. Pylee finished explaining by telling us, "There's many Dooks around our tangerine speck. The proffer estimates there may be more of them than there are elders at this point." "How can that be possible?" Yule's eyes traced prints and scrapes on the ground before us as she tried to wrap her mind around the concept. "Some people don't want to become elders or follow the tendril's orders. And the current of time eventually washes all of us out of urchinhood." It was my turn to study our path as we drifted nearer to our destination. They appeared to be from people, and some of the fresh ones were unmistakably Wyken marks. I had no input or questions, but that explains a lot about things I had never considered or pressed to question. I looked to my hand, my palm shook, and faint magenta creases lined it. Elderhood comes with a lot of work to continue grinding for time until boredom, fulfillment, or a lack of time finds you an ending. Pylee makes the Duke sound like a group of vagabonds, unbound but so critically limited by the natural span of our lives. To become a Duke's? Become withered and jufied? Do we of the Coven and the surrounding areas celebrate death because more often than not it's a choice? Because for every 3 urchins that are demolished by wild rucks, ensnared by Arachlians, taken by the tendrils, there's one elder who feels it's their time. Did those elders feel like I do? When they were urchins, fear that life could end? If eldership means losing that. You think a lot, Faye. That holiday I mentioned, Day of Decay, maybe some things you're thinking will make sense then. Cena's mother has dropped out of the trial of the tendrils, as Pylee had told us, and Heather's cast on the waves was incredibly professional. I'm really proud of her, but Heather is a topic for another time. The trial, without Cena's mother, is now down to 3 contenders. The proper now has a solid lead on second as many Ikta's followers move to his camp. Pyla remains confident that he will make it through the trials with success. She indicated that the coming speeches and drills would influence the higher eldritch beings enough to make up for the mass's blindness. I tuned into Dame Mirren's cast and heard what Pyla was saying, verified, though now I don't really understand how, through the lens of Mirren's reality, things still line up. Maybe she isn't in a different fragmented magenta dimension. Maybe that's the point of the UV wavecast? I've heard from some that my casts aren't often chronological, as if they can't stop my casting bastions, but they can interfere. Like the thousands of Q9s in that dark void, they just operate in a different plane.
Thad, that's all you have to say after all this time?
Oh, what am I supposed to say? If you want the loathsome truth, everyone thinks you should be back here preparing to fill your role.
I'm beginning to fill it just well enough without being in the cove.
Yeah, come on. I listen to her little casts. It's downright pleasant. There's nothing loathsome about her voice, and the gritty tones of her voice are worse than sandier. And the fact that she's still proud to be an urchin.
What?
I said Fable's voice grinds my eardrums to the point of bleeding.
No, not your dumb loving sentiments. The urchin bit.
Yule. And school is behind us. Like, even I'm looking at elderhood.
Don't you lecture me, Dukes. I played decent doorball to not completely fail out.
Oh, Yule, that's rough. Have you listened to Fable? You can't seriously be taken by her ideas and be okay with her trarp. She's an eldritch thing all her own. She doesn't know what she's doing and has put herself and all of you in danger.
The Smogstalker wasn't her fault.
You shouldn't have been there in the first place.
That crepuscular place was a prison.
You shouldn't have been there.
I'm done with you, Thad. You don't know a beg-thucking thing about her or me. And the least Faye does is listen.
Some sense of normalcy registered in both Yule and I when we entered Nertel. Never have I seen Yule so captivated. I don't blame her. We've had a rough trip, and the mere chance to fathom a respite. Pyla immediately was greeted, not directly, but with smiles and gestures. The people and their garb seemed luminous, not like the dazzling rays of after Smog's time, or the haunting lights I've been seeing the past couple seasons, but like a pleasant bioluminescence. Through the burg, Pyla pointed out places of interest. Taylor and Crafter's Hollows, the cathedral, its tall stained panes giving me frightening flashbacks to a dining hall, and Hollows of Kinships, who helped define Nertel. As Pyla showed us through Nertel, I couldn't help but notice, well, I don't know how to say this nicely, every face we came across, well, friendly indeed, I started to realize that their smiles are much like how Pyla's sometimes is, seemingly pinned in place, forced. The elder of the hollow was Diren, an elder who held himself much like Pyla and kept that same urchin youthfulness about him, making his centuries on our tangerine speck difficult to guess. He was cool-mannered and had a very warm and soft voice. His invitation to eat at his slab was one that made Yule and I high tide. The most recent hot meal we had had, well, we had a few through the fields, but on the last rail was the best, like, actual hot meal we had had, and those were thinly rationed enough to leave me hungrier than I was beforehand. The fish Elder Diren told us was freshly caught waxing fin. He explained that the launch, their shore, but with docks and a boardwalk, had a market twice a week after the smogs roll out. His phrase for being up and out that early was, "The fastest zing gets the nectar." I wasn't quite sure I understood the specifics of his metaphor, but I get the idea. The meat was just a tiny bit sweet under the wonderful savory flavors. The bones were just a bit too hard. It could have been the fish, but for as much as I loved and was grateful for the meal, I felt a lonely howl of longing for the crunchy, brittle bones of Grandmom's charp. "The real reason we tapped your ruins, Duren," Pylee explained as she finished all but a few bites of her meal, "is to help Fable with her leg." I glanced at Yule, who seemed to sigh in relief. I had nearly run out of the pills she had gotten for me after the wastes, and had worn longer skirts to cover up most of the web-like swelling to not have anyone in this new hollow ship notice more than my meandering gait. But the Elder nodded, noting that he had observed my obtuse drifting and saw the bulging sore peeking out beneath my dress and a smattering of red bleeding through Pylee's wrappings. "You can help?" He smiled, and though it was reassuring, when his eyes met mine, there was something dark within them. But again, just like a couple times as we've been making our way into Lunatha, I could have been mistaken. Elder Diren carried on the meal, serving a sweet tart topped with a bitter froth. He poured us all a nectar that was, well, it was divine. I'd never had anything like it. And I saw when it hit Yule's lips, the look on her face was unforgettable. Surprised by it, perhaps, or surprised at the familiarity. I'm not certain, but after that initial reaction, she settled back and slowly enjoyed the ambrosia. Pylee as well relaxed back and slowly sipped the nectar. I may have drank it too fast. Us Noxes do have some culture. It just feels like forever since we've been anywhere civilized.